Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 917, Wiki Fascism, Part 4, Weighing In for the Troop and Kampfverbande, Technocratic Fascism in Action. This is being recorded on August 11th of the year 2016. This program will exemplify why it is very important for people who listen to the program to use the website and access past programs and posts, and be sure to subscribe to the comments that are posted, because they are an expert source of information. The SpitfireList.com blog is not like other blogs. I don't have the comments there for people to troll and try to start a thread and basically engage in anonymous rhetorical masturbation. They are there as a supplemental information source and are intended as such. So if you're a troll, or if you just want to masturbate rhetorically or intellectually on the internet, this is not the site to which you should go. There are some fascinating and very important things going on with implications so devastating that it could not be overstated. And we're going to be providing a follow-up to, for the records, 724, 732, 745, and 755, the last three, all of which deal with WikiLeaks, the last three of which are Wiki Fascism, parts 1, 2, and 3. The Trump and Kampfverbande, that's Trump and Kampfverbande, a personal invention, is my reference to Donald Trump and his campaign. In an upcoming program, I'm going to analyze that, although the superficial and, frankly, vulgar and quasi or pseudo-intellectual analysis of Trump is that he is a Russian dupe, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that withstands superficial analysis at all. I think rather he is in all probability a frontman for the underground Reichskapital networks originally founded by Martin Bormann. German corporations, which are governed by the Bormann Group, are very unhappy with sanctions against Russia. They have lost a lot of business, and they would like to see them lifted. Beyond that, Germany is pushing very hard and actually beginning to realize their goals for not only a European-wide FBI and the equivalent of a European-wide NSA, but more importantly, a Eurocorps, an EU-developed military capability. Trump's statements about Russia, which have been interpreted as meaning he is a Putin dupe, and his statements about NATO should be seen in that context. To make an extremely long story very short, the sun is setting on the American Empire, and a country that was never really our friend, Germany, and had from the very beginning plotted our demise and replacement, is doing just that. And dissolving ultimately NATO and permitting German corporations to continue good operations with Russia are basically a continuation of traditional German Ostpolitik. There's a book for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website, Germany Plots with the Kremlin by T.H. Tettens, that will go into that at greater length. I wish I could do better in this limited context than to refer you to a book, but that's why it is there. When you talk about German Ostpolitik, it's something that stretches back to Frederick the Great and was formalized by Otto von Bismarck, the Iron Chancellor, and it's something about which Americans know absolutely nothing, which really is not surprising, as Ambrose Bierce, a 19th-century curmudgeon, observed, quote, "War is God's way of teaching Americans geography. So we're going to go into Trump, not a Russian tool, but in all probability a German tool. And beyond that, a Habsburg tool, I suspect, at least to an extent. More about that in programs to come. The Habsburgs, the ruling family of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, in power for 600 years, allied with the Underground Reich, and they have a very different perspective on things. 600 years ago would be 1416. It would be another three-quarters of a century before Columbus would sail, and the Habsburgs were in power for that long. And when they look at America or democracy, they say, well, basically America is a blip, and democracy is a blip, so we will bide our time and make our plans accordingly, and they are doing that. That's one of the reasons why they are allied with the consummately powerful and a brilliant Bormann Capital Organization and the Underground Reich. Now, we're going to be talking about WikiLeaks in, for the record, 724, 732, 745, and 755. I talked about the very compelling evidence that not only is WikiLeaks not a, quote, progressive, unquote, organization, but its ideology and its affiliations, its political heritage and manifestations are as far to the right as you can get and are fascist with a capital F. David Duke is something of a trace element not only for WikiLeaks, but also for the Snowden operation. The Snowden op and the WikiLeaks op are part of what I call the Conga Line ops in, for the record, 885. I have referred to Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden in the past, not only as Eddie the Friendly Spook and the Peach Fuzz Fascist, and he is that. His ideology and his affiliations also go to the far right, but of course, the so-called progressive sector in this country does no research and is essentially lazy. They're like a bunch of baby birds being fed little pieces of worm by their mother. They just sit there and crane their necks and munch down happily on whatever piece of masticated worm the far right drops into their mouths, and then consider themselves not only very lucky but very clever to have partaken of such delicacies. I've also referred to Eddie the Friendly Spook as the obverse Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald, the patsy in the JFK assassination, was trafficked around, including and especially into the former Soviet Union, branded a communist slash Marxist slash leftist, and then killed before he could defend himself against having been framed for the assassination of JFK. In a number of programs and in many books available, we have talked about the painting of Oswald Red. There are direct connections between the Ukraine op and the murder of Stefan Bandera and the painting of Oswald Red. We went into that in AFA program number 15 and also in For the Record programs 777 and 876. Oswald was no communist. He was a U.S. intelligence officer infiltrated into the left and then given a left cover and killed, thereby focusing blame for the assassination of JFK on the former Soviet Union and on Castro's Cuba, thus deflecting from the far right wing and fascist and U.S. and German intel authorship of the assassination of JFK. I think that the, quote, Russian, unquote, authorship of the DNC hack, that is the hack of Democratic National Committee emails, which was released on the eve of the Democratic National Convention and which spurred the Bernie bots, the followers of St. Bernard, Bernie Sanders, to act up at the convention, and act up they surely did. It was clearly intended to damage Hillary Clinton. And in turn, it has led many elements in the right wing and national security establishments to say, well, actually, we need Hillary Clinton because if, in fact, the Trump and Confabanda does not win the White House, and that looks to be a very real possibility, they want to be able to manipulate Hillary Clinton and then, in subsequent years, alienate the progressive sector or the so-called progressive sector and young Americans in particular from the Democratic Party so that they can put another Republican back in office. The superficial representation of the DNC hack just does not hold up as of Russian author. Well, the facts concerning the DNC hack do not actually point to Russia, but actually point to someone trying to frame Russia for this, just like Lee Harvey Oswald was painted red and then framed for the assassination of JFK and killed before he could defend himself. I think that it is very possible that the authorship of the DNC hack had something to do with Eddie the Friendly Spook himself. He is a CIA and also contracted with the NSA, then doubled on the NSA, and he is now in Russia and working in the computer business. I have no hard information. I strongly suspect that Snowden was involved in some way with the DNC hack. He was deeply involved with WikiLeaks and the whole WikiLeaks milieu. Glenn Greenwald deeply involved with WikiLeaks and also in Snowden's leaking journalist of choice, now working for The Intercept, funded by Pierre Omidyar, who also helped to fund the Maidan coup in Ukraine. The end, by the way, of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's reboot with Russia was affected by Snowden's defection to Russia. A very thoughtful article appeared on the Council on Foreign Relations blog of August 1st of 2016. This is by Dr. Sandro, S-A-N-D-R-O, Gaykin, or Gaykin, G-A-Y-C-K-E-N. He is the director of Digital Society Institute, a former hacktivist, and a strategic advisor to NATO, some German DAX companies, and the German government on cyber matters. DAX is the German stock exchange. This article, Blaming Russia for the DNC Hack is Almost Too Easy, by Dr. Sandro Gaykin. And after talking about the superficial evidence making this hack look Russian, look to be of Russian authorship, and noting that the same tools in the incident appeared in previous cases of alleged Russian espionage, some of which appeared in a hack of the German Bundestag, others in hacks of German industry. The attackers were dubbed Cozy Bear and Fancy Bear. And then he goes on to say, skipping down, a critical look exposes the significant flaws in the attribution. First of all, the technical evidence can be spoofed, although some argue that spoofing the mound of uncovered evidence is too much work. It can be easily done by a small team of good hackers in 3 or 4 days. Second, the tools used by Cozy Bear appeared on the black market when they were first discovered years ago and have been recycled and used against many other targets, including against German industry. The reuse and fine-tuning of existing malware happens all the time. Third, the language, location settings, and compilation metadata can be easily altered by changing basic settings on the attacker's computer in 5 minutes without the need of special knowledge. None of the technical evidence is convincing. It would only be convincing if the attackers used entirely novel, unique, and sophisticated tools with unmistakable indicators pointing to Russia, supported by human intelligence, not by malware analysis. The DNC attackers also had very poor, almost comical operational security or OPSEC. State actors tend to have a quality assurance review when developing cyber attack tools to minimize the risk of discovery and leaving obvious crumbs behind. Russian intelligence services are especially good. They are highly capable, tactically and strategically agile and rational. They ensure that offensive tools are tailored and proportionate to the signal they want to send, the possibility of disclosure and public perception, and the odds of escalation. The shoddy OPSEC just doesn't fit what we know about Russian intelligence. The claim that Guccifer 2.0, that's the name of the hacker, is a Russian false flag operation may not hold up either. If Russia wanted to cover up the fact that it hacked the DNC, why create a pseudonym that could only attract more attention and publish emails? Dumping a trove of documents all at once is less valuable than cherry-picking the most damaging information and strategically leaking it in a crafted and targeted fashion as the FSB, SVR, or GRU have probably done in the past. Also, leaking to WikiLeaks isn't hard. They have a submission form. Given these arguments, blaming Russia is not a slam dunk. Why would a country with some of the best intelligence services in the world commit a whole series of really stupid mistakes in a highly sensitive operation? Why pick a target that has a strong chance of leading to escalatory activity when Russia is known to prefer incremental actions over drastic ones? Why go through the trouble of a false flag when doing nothing would have been arguably better? Lastly, how does Russia benefit from publicly backing Donald Trump, given that Republicans have been skeptical of improving relations? The superficial evidence and information in the public domain strongly suggest Russia was behind the DNC hack, even though Russian intelligence services would have had the choice of not making it so clear-cut, given what we know about their tools, tactics, procedures, and thinking. The DNC hack leads to at least four what-if questions, each with its own significant policy consequences, skipping down. Third, if the breach and leak were perpetrated by a bunch of random activists using the pseudonym Guccifer 2.0, it would be the first instance of non-state actors succeeding in creating a global incident with severe strategic implications, demanding more control of such entities, and a much better design of escalatory processes among nations. Finally, it is entirely possible that this was a false flag operation by an unknown third party to escalate tensions between nuclear superpowers. If this is the case, this party has to be uncovered. More from a right-wing, albeit some pretty thoughtful defense-oriented publication called Defense One from July 28th of 2016. It's by Patrick Tucker, and even though it goes, well, you know, it was Russia, but they wanted to be caught, which is silly, frankly. Russia wanted to be caught, says company waging war on the DNC hackers by Patrick Tucker. But there is some intelligent dissent skipping down. But security expert Jeff Carr, C-A-R-R, thought the smoke off this smoking gun was a bit too thick. In his minority report, he asks, what kind of spy ring tags their stolen docs before releasing them under a cover? Quote, raise your hand if you think that a GRU or FSB officer would add Iron Felix's name to the metadata of a stolen document before he released it to the world while pretending to be a Romanian hacker. Someone clearly had a wicked sense of humor, he wrote. CrowdStrike President Sean Henry is also dubious. Quote, I don't know what kind of foreign intelligence service conducting a covert operation wants to be found, he said on Thursday, but added that CrowdStrike picked up a DNC hack within 48 hours and that it, quote, wasn't difficult, unquote. Well, I do think this was not only a false flag operation, whether it was a third party, Eddie the Friendly Spook, or both. This, by the way, is some people may be wondering why. Even though I frankly don't think much of the NSA, I don't like them, but I am very strongly supportive of NSA, in particular VSA, with regard to the Snowden operation. We are in an entirely new era of civilization when someone, when a hacker with a laptop can bring down a nuclear power plant and wreak untold havoc on civilization. Being able to deal with such things effectively is fundamental. I'm a long way from convinced that NSA is up to the job at hand, but I'm going to tell you it sure as hell won't be if they're not. The Electronic Freedom Foundation or the ACLU or the Green Party sure as bloody hell aren't up to it. So let's hope. Again, this is really scary. As Sandro Geiken, again, an advisor to NATO and to German companies. Finally, it is entirely possible that this was a false flag operation by an unknown third party to escalate tensions between nuclear superpowers. That's got to scare the hell out of you. I have noted in the past, again, for the record, 7:24, but in particular 7:32, 7:45, and 7:55, that all of the links of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks go to the far right and fascist elements. He is basically, their operation is wiki-fascism. It is now pretty damn clear that Julian Assange is working for Donald Trump. By the way, we should remember that the Russian and Scandinavian operations of WikiLeaks and with Eddie the Friendly Spook are very close. The Obvious Oswald, very close to WikiLeaks and in Russia. The Russian operations of WikiLeaks are managed by Johannes Wallström, the son of Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, a doctrinaire Holocaust denier who has gone on record as saying it is the duty of all good Christians and Muslims to deny the Holocaust. He is sadly typical of Julian Assange's associates, and with him in charge, with his son, a bird of the same political feather, in charge of Russia's WikiLeaks operation, WikiLeaks Russian operations, I should say, and with Eddie the Friendly Spook, the Obvious Oswald, inside Russia, yea, verily, as I speak, with the WikiLeaks-assisted transit of Eddie the Friendly Spook from Hong Kong to Russia, which put the final nail in the coffin of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's attempted reboot with Russia. We should be scrutinizing that. A few things, and I will put links in the descriptions to this show, because again, the limitations of time are severe. Roger Stone is a Republican dirty tricks specialist whose track record goes back to Nixon's 1972 campaign. He was not only the manager of Donald Trump's campaign, but continues to be the dirty tricks specialist for Trump's campaign. One of the things he did was to publish or threaten to publish the hotel numbers of anti-Trump delegates at the Republican National Convention, an invitation to perform violence against those anti-Trump Republican delegates. He also has published a book blaming Hillary Clinton for the murder of John F. Kennedy Jr. He also has been very active on the Clinton Foundation. He also, as we will see, is now in direct touch with Julian Assange. I also want to note that there is a book called Clinton Cash, published by a guy named Schweitzer. I think his first name is Peter. Put a question mark by that. There will be a link in the description. And he has published a book blasting the Clinton Foundation as a money laundering operation for this, that, and the other thing. And it is against the background of the dirty tricks of Roger Stone, who continues to be sort of the Machiavelli of the Trump campaign, that we must examine Julian Assange. Very quickly, from Salon by Ben Norton, July 14th of 2016, WikiLeaks will release new Clinton emails to add to incriminating evidence, Julian Assange says, in big year ahead. And skipping down. Assange doesn't believe that Clinton will be indicted, this in the email scandal, but argues that the government has more than enough evidence in both her emails and in the dealings of the Clinton Foundation if it were truly committed to doing so. We have upcoming leaks in relation to Hillary Clinton, Assange said. WikiLeaks has a very big year ahead. Very quickly, of 30,000 emails that were examined, by the way, it was not illegal to do what Hillary did, exactly 12 had classified information in them. That is a margin of error of 0.36%. That is incredibly low. Those 12 emails were sent. The only ones sent by Hillary subsequently were reclassified with classified information. The others were sent to her. A 0.36% margin of error is a hell of a lot better than anything WikiLeaks has ever done, or that anybody in any size, shape, form, or manner associated with WikiLeaks has ever done either. By the way, something to remember. We are seeing all of this data dumping. Not only is hacking a crime, but what sort of QC is going on here? What sort of quality control? If there are 19,000 or however many emails or 30,000 emails, how do we know that some of those aren't clever forgeries? Certainly, the possibility of WikiLeaks or another party doing that is something to be considered. I will guarantee you with all of these hundreds of thousands of documents from Bradley Manning or Edward Snowden or WikiLeaks or God knows who in the DNC hack. Again, that looks to me just like the painting of Oswald Red. What sort of QC is going on? How do we know that what is being released is not a clever forgery? There's no QC going on, period. I'll guarantee you. Also note the following, too, about everybody's wonderful citizen, Julian Assange, from the Gizmodo blog, G-I-Z as in Zebra, M-O-D-O, of July 26th of 2016. WikiLeaks just published tons of credit card and social security numbers by Michael Nunez, N-U-N-E-Z. The organization, speaking of WikiLeaks skipping down, has also used that tradition of transparency for less just causes. Like today, when the site published 19,252 emails from top U.S. Democratic National Committee members, many of which included personal information about innocent donors, including credit card, social security numbers, and passport numbers. If you visit the WikiLeaks DNC emails website, you can browse the emails using a simple Boolean search. Typing a word like contribution, unquote, will actually turn up hundreds of results. The emails include unencrypted, plain text listings of donor email addresses, home addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, passport numbers, and credit card information. WikiLeaks proudly announced the data dump in a single tweet. The new leak is part of the organization's ongoing Hillary Leaks series, which launched in March as a searchable archive of more than 30,000 emails and attachments sent to and from Clinton's private email server while she was Secretary of State. The original email dump included documents from June of 2010 to August of 2014. The new release includes emails from January 2015 to May of 2016. A very interesting statement by Citizen Assange. This is by Robert Johnson in The Inquisitor blog, INQUISITR, of June 13th of 2016. Hillary Clinton FBI investigation. Enough evidence of an indictment, but more emails coming, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange claims. And skipping down. Against this backdrop, Peston wondered if Assange would prefer that Donald Trump, the GOP presumptive nominee, wins the White House in November. Trump is a completely unpredictable phenomenon. You can't predict what he would do in office. Actually, you can. You just look at his economic proposals, his advisors, including people who got filthy rich or even filthier and richer off of the housing collapse in 2008. His top national security advisor is Joseph E. Schmitz, who became the head of Blackwater whatever Blackwater was renamed. I think it was still Blackwater when he became head of it. He's part of the ultra-right-wing Germanophile Schmitz family. I guess you could say he then became head of the artists formerly known as Blackwater. Trump is a very predictable phenomenon. He won't be able to do all of the things his followers are expecting him to do. But this is obviously, frankly, an oblique endorsement of Donald Trump by Julian Assange. Asked if he would prefer Donald Trump, Trump is a completely unpredictable phenomenon. You can't predict what he would do in office. And again, note that all of the stuff about Clinton Cash and the Clinton Foundation, that comes from a book by, I think his name is Peter, or his last name is certainly Schweitzer, and he is a protege of the Koch brothers, as we looked at in For the Record 906. Roger Stone, again, is blaming the death of JFK on a Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton murder plot. Koch brothers protege Schweitzer is hyping the Clinton Cash about the Clinton Foundation. And here is WikiLeaks. Roger Stone claims he's in touch with WikiLeaks Assange about Clinton emails by Allegra Kirkland from the Talking Points memo LiveWire of August 9th of 2016. Longtime Donald Trump ally Roger Stone claimed on Monday that he was in touch with the founder of WikiLeaks about documents the organization plans to release to derail Hillary Clinton's campaign. During a Monday speech to the Southwest Broward Republican Organization, Stone was asked for his forecast, unquote, on what the, quote, October surprise, unquote, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange had promised to reveal about Clinton may be. Well, there could be any number of things, Stone said, according to a video of his remarks obtained by Media Matters. I actually have communicated with Assange. I believe the next tranche of his documents pertain to the Clinton Foundation, but there's no telling what the October surprise may be, unquote. These remarks fly in the face of Stone and other Trump allies' repeated claims that the general election results may be rigged, unquote, in Clinton's favor, skipping down. Since late July, Stone has pushed the claim that a Clinton victory could only result from a rigged election system that favored her campaign, quote, if there's voter fraud, this election will be illegitimate. The election of the winner will be illegitimate. We will have a constitutional crisis, widespread civil disobedience, and the government will no longer be the government, unquote. Stone said in a podcast with Breitbart's Milo Yiannopoulos, despite the overwhelming evidence that voter fraud is virtually non-existent in the United States. Now, bear in mind that WikiLeaks published the credit card numbers, social security numbers of Democratic Party donors. That would not only permit retaliation against them from an economic standpoint, it may have permitted a whole lot more. Remember also that Roger Stone is hyping the notion that the Clintons were behind the murder of JFK Jr. And the way somebody asked me if I'd heard about this, and I said, no, I hadn't heard anything about it. Again, note how Julian Assange is basically operating on the playbook, not only of Roger Stone, but on the ultra-right-wing slash fascist foundation that WikiLeaks is grounded upon. Again, I've been talking about that for years. Please, 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 please use the website for the record, 724, 732, 745, and 755, dealing with that.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
This from Slate Magazine of August 9th of 2015. It's by Jeremy Stahl, capital S-T-A-H-L. WikiLeaks is fanning a conspiracy theory that Hillary murdered a DNC staffer. Julian Assange and his WikiLeaks organization appear to be actively encouraging a conspiracy theory that a Democratic National Committee staffer was murdered for nefarious political purposes, perhaps by Hillary Clinton. Seth, S-E-T-H, Rich, R-I-C-H, was killed last month in Washington, D.C., in an early morning shooting, that being 4 o'clock in the morning, the police have speculated was a failed robbery. Because Rich did voter outreach for the DNC, and because we live in a ridiculous world, conspiracy theorists have glommed onto a fantastical story that Rich was an FBI informant meeting with purported agents who were actually a hit team sent by Hillary Clinton. There is, of course, absolutely zero evidence for this, and Snopes has issued a comprehensive debunking of the premise. Rich was only 27 and had only worked at the DNC since 2014, so is unlikely to be in possession of information that might take down Clinton. He was on the phone with his girlfriend at the time of the shooting, and she hasn't reported any FBI meeting. There have been a string of robberies in the area. An FBI rendezvous at 4 a.m. only happens in movies, and the whole thing is bat-s blank 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 crazy, etc. Parenthetically, I would add, might some of the Hillary leaks documents have had something to do with permitting someone else to have identified Seth Rich and have killed him, thereby infuriating the Bernie bots? Not hard to do, frankly. I am in agreement with the vast majority of the policy proposals of Bernard Sanders. However, I also would like to live forever, and the possibilities of both are equal. I was not impressed with Bernie Sanders, although it may turn out if, in fact, his followers stick to it for decades and are really selfless and tenacious in their work. I doubt they will. It might turn out to be a good thing, but he's a very personally and politically immature human being, and only slightly less demagogical than Donald Trump, who says, we're going to build a wall, we're going to do this, we're going to make America great again. And when pressed about how he was going to do what he was going to do, what he proposed to do, Bernie Sanders would say, well, we're going to have a political revolution. Great. You know, good stuff. I mean, that is so cheesy. But that's the way it goes these days. Continuing with the analysis of the WikiLeaks implication that Seth Rich was murdered by a Hillary Clinton hit team because he was informing on the DNC, blah, blah, blah. Also, look, there are questions here that he was the source for WikiLeaks' DNC hack. I thought that was Russia. Gee, anyway. The fact that the idea is so absurd, though, has not stopped Assange from suggesting that Rich was murdered for nefarious political purposes, either because he was an informant for the FBI or because he may have been a source in last month's WikiLeaks release of thousands of DNC emails. Again, that supposedly came from Russia, although the evidence suggests that it was deliberately structured to make Russia look bad, kind of like the painting of Oswald Red. In an interview on Thursday, it was picked up by BuzzFeed's Andrew Kaczynski. Assange seemed to lend credence to the idea that Rich had been retaliated against. WikiLeaks never sits on material. Whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material and often very significant risks, Assange said in an interview with the Dutch television program Nieuwsuur. That's probably mispronounced, Nieuwsuur. Quote, there's a 27-year-old who works for the DNC who was shot in the back, murdered just a few weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the streets in Washington. No, he was on the phone with his girlfriend. By the way, Seth Rich's family has repudiated what Assange has said and urged people to disregard it. Continuing, when Assange was questioned as to what the hell he was talking about, he said, I'm suggesting that our sources take risks and they become concerned to see things occurring like that, unquote. The implication here is that either Assange's sources are fearful that Rich might have been a whistleblower to the FBI or someone else and was taken out by Clinton or others as the conspiracy theory suggests, or that he was a whistleblower for Assange's group and was murdered because of that. When the interviewer asked Assange if he was implying that Rich was a WikiLeaks source, he said, we don't comment on who our sources are, unquote. On Tuesday, WikiLeaks sent out a tweet offering a $20,000 reward for information about Rich's murder. And again, Rich's family has denied this. One of the things I took note of in For the Record 745, they're talking about all of the Nazi and Holocaust-denying associations of Julian Assange. When he was confronted with this, he claimed he was the victim of an international Jewish conspiracy. Now, if people had a quarter of a brain, they would know that that is a real serious indication of what's going on. When someone is confronted with very damaging information about Nazi and anti-Semitic associations, he says, well, it's because I'm the victim of an international Jewish conspiracy. You're basically dealing with someone of Nazi orientation. And when Assange was criticized over the DNC links, and in response to his criticism, this from the Daily Dot of July 24th of 2016. WikiLeaks denies anti-Semitism over Echo's tweet. If any one form of discriminatory social media expression has been on the rise in recent months, it's been anti-Semitism. The Donald Trump presidential campaign's well-documented white nationalist and neo-Nazi following continues to bring such hatred to the forefront. Trump himself had even retweeted things from members of the white genocide movement, and in June, the campaign tweeted out an anti-Semitic meme that originated from the alt-right fever swamps of social media. On Saturday, a completely different organization seemed to dip its toes in those waters as well. WikiLeaks started tweeting about Echoes, and that's what was surrounded by three parentheses on each side, and it's generated a great amount of controversy. It's one of the increasingly well-known methods of harassment used by anti-Jewish racists on Twitter, which has exploded into wider visibility in recent months, tweeting at Jews and bracketing their names with two or three parentheses on either side. It's intended both as a signal to other anti-Semites and neo-Nazis to highlight the target's Jewish heritage or perceived Jewish heritage, since racists aren't always the sharpest or most concerned with accuracy, and track them on social media, making it even easier for other anti-Semites to join in on the abuse. So WikiLeaks basically engaging in the sort of oblique anti-Semitic tweeting that Trump and others of his ilk have been doing. Skipping down. That's where WikiLeaks comes in. On Saturday, amid the group's high-profile dump of thousands and thousands of emails from the Democratic National Committee, its Twitter account says something very suggestive about its critics. The tweet has since been deleted, going against WikiLeaks' perceived notion of radical transparency. Nonetheless, screenshotters never forget. It's not exactly the most coherent tweet, but the thrust is nonetheless pretty clear. WikiLeaks accused most of its critics of having the Echo's brackets around their names, as well as, quote, black-rimmed glasses, unquote. Statements that many interpreted plainly enough as, quote, most of our critics are Jews, unquote. Again, very, very similar to what Assange did when confronted with information about Carl Lundstrom, Jaron Jeremoss et al. He said, I'm the victim of an international Jewish conspiracy. More about the far-right crypto-Nazi associations of WikiLeaks from the Huffington Post of August 3rd, 2016. It's by Akbar Shahid Ahmed. WikiLeaks motivations aren't what you think. That has to get, that's something of a New World's indoor record for understatement. WikiLeaks motivations aren't what you think. Boy, is that a fact. I don't think necessarily from the whole article that the author really understands, but he got at least a little bit of it. Meanwhile, he, Assange, has attracted support from powerful anti-U.S. actors in his battle with Swedish authorities. Two right-wing political parties in Europe that are skeptical of Washington, the far-right National Front in France and the pro-Brexit UK Independence Party, have called for their countries to grant Assange asylum so he can avoid questioning by Sweden. And again, we've noted all of the far-right and Nazi and fascist elements that either support WikiLeaks, are inextricably linked with WikiLeaks, or have been supported by WikiLeaks, including some parties in Australia. A bit more about Assange. For those of you who are supporters of St. Bernard, again, I agree with the vast majority of Bernie Sanders' policy proposals. I would also like to live forever. The possibilities of both happening are equal. From the libcom.org blog of August 27th of 2012, this by someone who posts under the name of Ramona, Julian Assange, also neoliberal utopian, about his philosophy. I'm going to attenuate this due to the limitations of time, but there are plenty of links in the description for the show. Assange's most lengthy articulation of his own politics comes in a lengthy interview with Forbes magazine. Asked, "What would you call yourself, a free market proponent?" Assange replies, "Absolutely. I have mixed attitudes towards capitalism, but I love markets." Skipping down, and after developing that, Assange's philosophy here blends Austrian and Chicago school approaches. Well, isn't that wonderful? The Austrian and Chicago School of Economics are sort of the Gargantua and Pantagruel of economic theory. And again, that it's absolutely in keeping with everything we've seen about Assange.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
One of the things that we looked at in For the Record 756 was Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden's endorsement of Ron Paul, one of the chief legal counsel for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, was Eddie Snowden's first attorney and is the attorney for the Snowden family. Julian Assange is also a big fan of both Ron and Rand Paul. Let's take a look. We're going to review something from Pando Daily of May 1st of 2015, an article by the incisive, heroic Mark Ames, AMES, Baltimore, and The Walking Dead. Listen to this. Is Ron Paul, again, Eddie the Friendly Spook, and Julian Assange's presidential candidate of choice. Listen to this, and this in the context of the Trump campaign. In 1992, the most famous libertarian of all, Ron Paul, was still between congressional stints when the riots in Los Angeles erupted, but he did run a profitable libertarian newsletter, the Ron Paul Political Report, to keep his ideas alive. Shortly after the L.A. riots, Ron Paul put out a special issue on racial terrorism, offering his libertarian analysis of what he termed black terrorism. The criminals who terrorize our cities in riots and on every non-riot day are not exclusively young black males, but they largely are. As children, they are trained to hate whites, to believe that white oppression is responsible for all black ills, to fight the power, to steal and loot as much money from the white enemy as possible. The cause of the riots is plain: barbarism. If the barbarians cannot loot sufficiently through legal channels, i.e. the riots being the welfare state minus the middleman, they resort to illegal ones, to terrorism. Trouble is, few seem willing to stop them. The cops have been handcuffed. We are constantly told that it is evil to be afraid of black men, but it is hardly irrational. Black men commit murders, rapes, robberies, muggings, and burglaries all out of proportion to their numbers, unquote. I think we can safely assume that 95% of the black males in major U.S. cities are semi-criminal or entirely criminal, unquote. A few months later, in October of 1992, Dr. Paul explained how he taught his own family, presumably including his favorite son, Rand Paul, how to defend themselves and even murder what Dr. Paul called hip-hop carjackers, the urban youth who play unsuspecting whites like pianos. What can you do? More and more Americans are carrying a gun in the car. An ex-cop I know advises that if you have to use a gun on a youth, you should leave the scene, immediately disposing of the wiped-off gun as soon as possible. Such a gun cannot, of course, be registered to you, but one bought privately through the classifieds, for example. Beyond that, the Libertarian Party's political solution to African-American poverty and injustice was to abolish all welfare programs, public schools, and anti-discrimination laws like the Civil Rights Act. This was a solution promoted by an up-and-coming libertarian, Jacob Hornberger, H-O-R-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, who this week co-hosted an event with Ron Paul and Glenn Greenwald. Hornberger believes that 19th-century antebellum slave-era America was the freest society in history, unquote. And again, look at that against the background of Black Lives Matter and Donald Trump. Bear in mind that that was written by Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, the obverse Oswald, and Julian Assange's presidential candidate of choice, Ron Paul. And that event with that apologist for the Confederacy and African-American slavery was co-hosted by Ron Paul and Glenn Greenwald. Very quickly about Glenn Greenwald. Examine this against the background of Trump's campaign, bearing in mind that Greenwald is joined at the hip with Assange and Snowden. From the New Republic of January 19th of 2014 by Sean Wilentz, W-I-L-E-N-T-Z. Would you feel differently about Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange if you knew what they really thought? Skipping down. This is Citizen Greenwald. The parade of evils caused by illegal immigration is widely known, Greenwald wrote in 2005. The facts to him were indisputable. Quote, illegal immigration wreaks havoc economically, socially, and culturally, makes a mockery of the rule of law, and is disgraceful just on basic fairness grounds alone. Defending the nativist Congressman Tom Tancredo from charges of racism, Greenwald wrote of, quote, unmanageably endless hordes of people who pour over the border in numbers far too large to assimilate and who consequently have no need, motivation, or ability to assimilate. Those hordes, Greenwald wrote, posed a threat to middle-class suburban voters. Sound like Donald Trump? No, that's Glenn Greenwald, joined at the hip with the obvious Oswald and Julian Assange. Very quickly, from the back cover of Serpent's Walk, about which I have spoken so much, this is put out by National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the National Alliance that was defended by Glenn Greenwald in a very important case that I've talked about in, for the record, 888. This one, Greenwald was an attorney. This is authored by someone writing under the name of Randolph D. Calderhall. And about the book, it assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. They did not, of course. Instead, their survivors went underground, which they did, and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. With the Bormann Network, they did just that. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. And that's what you're seeing right now with the angry males supporting Donald Trump. What Julian Assange and whoever did the DNC hack are practicing is what I branded as technocratic fascism from uncomputing.org of April 23rd of 2015, Tor, Technocracy and Democracy by David Golumbia, G-O-L-U-M-B-I-A. Such technocratic beliefs are widespread in our world today, especially in the enclaves of digital enthusiasts, whether or not they are part of the giant corporate digital leviathan. Hackers, civic, ethical, white and black hat alike, hacktivists, WikiLeaks, and Julian Assange, anonymous members, and even Edward Snowden himself walk hand in hand with Facebook and Google in telling us that coders don't just have good things to contribute to the political world, but that the political world is theirs to do with what they want, and the rest of us should just stay out of it. The political world is broken, they appear to think, rightly at least in part, and the solution to that, they think, wrongly at least for the most part, is for programmers to take political matters into their own hands. Again, the political world is theirs to do with what they want, and the rest of us should just stay out of it. That is what Assange is doing. He's not even an American citizen. And yet he's trying to put Donald Trump in office. Let's connect some dots in this. We haven't got much time, of course. At the time of the, quote, Russian, unquote, DNC hack, Eddie Snowden is in Russia. And it was Snowden's journey to Russia, affected by Sarah Harrison and WikiLeaks, that put the final nail in the coffin of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's reboot with Russia. The Clinton email non-scandal was an outgrowth of the Benghazi investigations, nine of them counting by the GOP, which then grew out of the so-called Arab Spring, one of the Conga Line ops I talked about in For the Record 885. In For the Record 733 and 734, we know that Karl Rove was acting as a top advisor to the Prime Minister of Sweden at the time that WikiLeaks landed on Swedish Nazi Carl Lundstrom's server. The launch of the Arab Spring stemmed from a leaked State Department cable. It was talked at one point in Tunisia. The Tunisian beginning of the piggyback coups, as I call them, was called the WikiLeaks coup. Karl Rove was also channeling money to Bernie Sanders. Again, there are links in the description. And Julian Assange, like Eddie Snowden, is a big Ron Paul fan. Ron Paul is very close to Mitt Romney, although he's from Texas. His super PAC was in Provo, Utah. The super PAC was largely capitalized by Peter Thiel, the largest stockholder in Palantir, which, its disclaimers notwithstanding, makes the PRISM software at the core of Raphael Snowden. Peter Thiel is now a Trump delegate. James Comey, head of the FBI, was a big supporter of Mitt Romney. Comey was also the former general counsel of Bridgewater Associates, the world's largest hedge fund, which provided a big chunk of startup capital for Palantir. David Duke has been a big supporter of Trump. Duke has been networking with Snowden presidential selection Ron Paul for decades. Carl Lundstrom, who financed the Pirate Bay site at which WikiLeaks landed, arranged a speaking tour for David Duke, and Joram Jeremoth, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, who arranged for WikiLeaks to be on Carl Lundstrom's site, and whose son is handling Russian and Scandinavian operations for WikiLeaks, as part of a Russian and Ukrainian fascist milieu that networks with David Duke. So please use the description for this show. There are a lot of links. Use the other links and books available on the SpitfireList.com website. This concludes, for the record, 917, Wikifascism, Part 4, weighing in for the triumphant Confabanda, Technocratic Fascism in Action. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.